Today we're asking people to name their one favorite meal for one from Stouffer's.
Maybe we'd start with the fun one this week.
I'm up for some fun this week.
Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. It has been a trying couple weeks for the show, for the show and for the world. I mentioned it last week because we just happened to do the production on Monday because Shelley Siegel was in town, and when I normally do production, we were putting on another live show, so I did the production on Monday, and between doing the show and doing the production, some really terrible stuff happened in Boston, and... I was compelled to at least mention it during, in sort of between the breaks as, this is what's going on. And this is the first show, that we've done since then. And, we know a lot more than we did last Monday when I mentioned it, because at the time everything was still up in the air. And honestly, I was expecting things to be still up in the air. But we know more now. Again, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. With me is Becky. How are you?
I'm great, Sam.
And Dan, how are you?
Not bad.
Yeah, you're here with us for the whole week this week, so
yeah,
or whole
day.
The whole week. Wow, it's a long show. So there's not much more to say.
Well, there is some cool stuff coming out, like Atheist Giving Aid. There's some really cool stuff about atheists and humanists mobilizing to provide relief for both some of the families affected by the Boston bombings, and also some of the really, sort of tragic stuff happening in Texas right now, in West Texas.
Yeah.
So Atheist Giving Aid is a really neat sort of venue to look out and donate your money.
Yeah, I think so. And what I asked for last week was, if you're an atheist and you listen to the show and you're planning on helping out in Boston or anywhere else for that matter, like I said, it wasn't that I wanted people to go there and go, da-da-da, we're atheists and we're here to help. It's more, I just wanted people to go and to help, and then later when the inevitable conversation occurs, everything was falling apart, where were the atheists, we now have the opportunity to say, in a way that maybe we didn't before, we were right here the whole time, where were you?
Right. It seems to happen with every kind of disaster that goes along, and I think one of the things that you'll find with atheists who are helping out as volunteers, they don't really necessarily feel that they need to bring up their religious orientation.
Right.
So,
not suggesting that we start.
Right, right. But I mean, after the fact, when people are going, well, where were the atheists? A lot of times, nobody really brought it up at the time,
Mm-hmm. And so that's where it is. And again, if you were helping out in Boston, or you were continuing to help out in... or you're helping out in Texas, after the fact, after you're done, and when you're probably dog tired, do let us know. Go to askanatheist.tv, click on the red button, and let us know. Now, there's another news story which I'd been reading about right before the show, and I didn't really prepare this at all, but there's been a lot of talk in the media this week. There's been an article on Salon. There's been a few on Huffington Post about new atheism and Islamophobia. Have you guys read about that?
I haven't been following that. What's that all about, Sam?
Well, what they're saying is that new atheists, quote-unquote new atheists, which is, new atheism, same as the old atheism, but in the form of Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, are now somehow embracing Islamophobia as if... we're just saying terrible. They're saying terrible things about Islam because they're insensitive rather than anything else. And you'll notice I said we're rather than there, because they're including the entire atheism movement, which I think does include us. And
I hope so.
Honestly, that really ticked me off, and I really wanted to. I've been kind of holding back on it. I haven't known what to say, but it occurred to me on the way here that really I think this is a good sign. I think this is a good sign for the movement, because before, at first they ignore you, right? And now,
right.
And now they're basically making fun of us. But what they're really trying to do, and this is really, I think, the insidious part of it, is they're taking two minority groups, two groups of people who do not, who do not have the religious privilege of the majority group, and trying to pit them against each other in some sort of weird gladiatorial combat. It's insidious, and it's fairly terrible, and really, Salon, Huffington Post, you guys can both do better than this. This is fairly terrible. Opinion piece or not, just if you're going to post stuff like this, I encourage you to allow response on the same pages, which I'm not used to. I don't often see it. I mean, as an example, during the Haiti earthquake, there was an article in the Tacoma News Tribune about where are the atheists. I think I've mentioned this a few times. And, you know, we as Tacoma atheists, we're like, we would like a chance to respond because we were doing stuff for the Haiti earthquake. And the newspaper said, no, we're not interested in publishing that response.
You know, one thing that comes to mind is a few months ago, we interviewed Hina Dadaboy, who is a former Muslim.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to when her book comes out, A Skeptic's Guide to Islam.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things she said is it's very, you know, you can be sensitive to the fact that you have a group of people that have experienced a lot of prejudice. You have people that have even experienced violence at, you know, the hands of people not understanding whether you are Muslim or you appear to be Muslim or you appear to be Sikh, but people get that confused with being Muslim or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, it's important to be sensitive to those kinds of things where you have someone that is getting the raw end of the stick or short end of the stick, but also to differentiate the ideas of someone from the actual person and being able to criticize ideas without attacking a whole group of people.
Here's what it is the fact of the matter is the atheism movement that we enjoy now, the sort of the resurgence of the atheism movement, had its beginnings with September 11th, just like a lot of things did. The world really changed then because of those attacks. And we are applying the same logic that we apply to Christian and majority religions here in the United States to Islam. It's not that they're trying to paint it as different standards because they're a minority group. We should somehow treat them differently. And that may make sense in the social realm. But when we start talking about the logic of things and we start talking about the dogma and the rhetoric of even Muslims who are not the vast majority of Muslims out there, they still have the same problems that Christians do. It's this stuff isn't scientifically backed, and it leads you down morally questionable paths. And it would really be bad for the movement if we only talked about one. Mm-hmm. You know, we do talk about Christianity here on the show and here in America more than we talk about other religions because it is sort of the religion of the social substrate.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I'd like to add a further note that, you know, I mean, if it's a problem that we're talking about the Abrahamic religions, I feel like maybe the Buddhists and the pagans are sort of getting off easy.
Yeah.
Maybe we could direct a little bit more, but it doesn't seem like they're doing so much harm or miseducation locally as the others are.
Perhaps. Well, maybe just because of the relative size of the movements.
Right.
So this is something that I think people, we should be talking about, and we've talked about in the before, and we talked about in the future, but honestly, all in all, I think the fact that they're looking for things to pin on us, and we're starting to see more articles about how atheists are screwing it up for everybody else, I think that's a sign of victory, I think that's a sign of growth, and I think we just, and rather than listen to them and say, hey, I mean, we do what we do as rationalists and skeptics, we look at their arguments, we see if their arguments have any worth, keep the good, get rid of the bad. And that's, but I think all in all, this is good news. That doesn't mean that all, you know, there's one bad news article, which I think we must talk about before we move on. And that's the faith healing thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Herbert and Catherine Scheibel, fundamentalist faith healing Christians, were put on probation in 2011 for having a child die of bacterial pneumonia in 2009. Rather than seeking medical treatment, they prayed over him as suggested by the first century gospel church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
First century, indeed.
Yeah, that's about right. Under the terms of that probation, the couple must seek medical attention for any medical ailment their children may have. Now, after this, all this went down, just like those folks in Oregon and stuff like that, there's always a debate about faith healing, welfare of children, and, you know, the right to seek the medical care for your children that you want. And there's freedom, there's liberty questions, but then there's also welfare of children questions that come up.
Yeah, I mean, parents have generally a lot of leeway with how to raise their children, how to rear their children, how to parent them, and what kinds of social communities they want to be a part of. But when, you know, you get to a point where you're injuring a child or you're through neglect, allowing a child to die, that's when the state steps in. That's one of those overwhelming interests that the state sort of says, hey, you know what? No, here's where we restrict that freedom.
Yeah, I mean, I am not blind to arguments about liberty, but I have these questions about these laws about child welfare that puts the liberty of the parents over the welfare of the children as if the children were property and not people. And why are we talking about something that happened in 2011 now? Well, they've now had a second 8-month-old son die of unknown causes. The child was taken to a funeral home by an unknown individual, and the undertaker alerted the police. An official cause of death is pending an autopsy, according to the police. So now we've had a second child from the same family die. Now, the first time they were found guilty of you know, criminal neglect, and they could have gone to prison, but instead they were given probation where they were supposed to seek medical attention for any medical ailment the child have. Child has, and now they've had another child die.
Yeah, that kind of seems very suspicious to me that their 8-month-old son died of quote-unquote unknown causes, but the person who's reporting this is the undertaker. Now, yeah. According to the terms of their probation, they're required to seek medical attention for any medical ailment their children may have. As far as I understand it, death is also a medical ailment, and that these sorts of things should certainly be reported, even if it's too late to do anything about it.
And it just, and they just sort of deposit it at the funeral home.
Right.
As if it were, you know, a cast off plant or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, we're looking at least, you know, a probation violation, which means their children will likely be taken away from them and they'll be sent to prison. And at this point, I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't either. I mean, when you're looking at, I mean, you have to see, hey, maybe they did not have the knowledge of what constitutes a medical ailment. But, you know, if they have that inclination, you know, or that hunch enough to pray over someone that is not doing well, then you have at least that hunch. Anytime you have the hunch to pray over someone, hey, because of your probation, that should be your signal to call the pediatrician, call urgent care, call 911, call first responder. Yeah.
And I just the attitude of dropping these kids off at the funeral home, it's like, well, you're gonna lose a couple. You know, it's like, what? Yeah. There's an attitude there. There's just a sort of blasé attitude of just depositing your child's corpse at the funeral home that just is beyond anything that I can really consider. I don't have kids, but I have a much younger brother who throws me. It throws me so much I can't even finish a sentence.
I find it absolutely crazy that anyone could apply the experimental gambler's ruin model to their own offspring. I mean, hey, you know what? We'll just keep running this. You know, maybe eventually we'll get a miracle, but in the meantime, hey, let her roll. Let her roll.
Maybe in the first century when we didn't have medical care. Actually,
right.
when I discovered that the Mormons had been doing recon on my family, and I saw sort of like the familial history. And just the vast number of people I'm named after, it's always like there was always three guys with the same name in any generation of family because the first two didn't make it because they didn't have medical care back then.
But we're talking 1890.
We're talking 200 years ago, 150 years ago. It's different now. You know,
quite
people can live. So this, we've also got another email. We have an email, actually an email. And this is Shannon from New York, and she writes, I listen to you guys every week as I ride my bicycle to work. Love the show. I bought a pair of shoes recently from a cool company, Atheist Berlin. I emailed them and suggested they advertise with you. Shannon, thank you very much for suggesting, and if you would like to see them advertise, by all means, email them and suggest to them that they could advertise with us. That's a great idea. It helps keep the show running, and if you can't donate, get people you like to advertise with us. That's a great idea. And we talked about them recently on the show.
Yeah. It seems that packages from that shoe company seem to disappear in the post more often than they should statistically, and possibly because the tape on the outside of the package says the word atheist right on the outside.
And the organization has now since stopped using that tape, and I hope they sell it, because I would totally buy some of that tape.
Anyone want to buy us a roll of atheist tape? That would be cool.
Right, so we suggested the experiment that we should try and come up with some other words that that have some sort of cultural connotation of power.
Yeah.
I suggested shark is a good word, something that people react very strongly to.
So this goes back to a study that a little experiment that the company did where they would send packages. They sent out like 200 packages, 100 with the tape and 100 without the tape. And the packages with the tape were much more likely to get lost or to take longer than packages without the tape.
Right.
A point of clarification, the non-atheist tape was just a blank white packaging tape.
Right. And that's an interesting study worth doing, I think. I would really like to follow up on that. A lot of people suggested that it was because there are words, and words mean they have to be hand... You know, but every package I've ever sent or received has words on it.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is plastered all over the Amazon boxes and you know, all those things.
I like that idea. We were originally talking about words like murder and blood. And we're like, well, maybe not those words because, you know, then the TSA is going to get involved.
Right, right. So maybe nothing with a directly violent connotation. But, you know, shark.
Well, shark, it could be flagged for actual biological specimens. So.
No. But we'd have to do some you know, like, we'd have to worry about semantic weighting of the words.
Hey, right. Why don't you put the word feminist on
I was going to suggest we put something like the word feminist on, or you put the word, or you put, like, Catholic on it. Mm-hmm. You know, you do a wide range. This would be a study with a major price tag for a show like ours, but I'm considering doing it.
Yeah, I mean, to get an N equals 30 out of our group, you know, we're looking at significant shipping costs, especially if we're considering overseas. But
yeah, like, could we do
it? Probably. I think the study is actually tractable. I think it's doable.
Yeah, I think so too. Could we do it with? Could we do it through letter carrying, or does it have to be a package? You think?
That I don't know. I mean, it's a lot. I would say it's probably a lot more tempting to lose a big package that the person, if they are in fact intentionally losing things, that you know is worth more.
So if we were designing this study to cover all, you know, to cover as much as we could, we'd have to do variable package sizes,
right.
Variable wording. Mm-hmm. So we'd be sending out like 800 packages.
Right. National versus international.
Yeah.
Continental versus intercontinental.
One of the funny things in sort of discussion that I saw that just tickles me is that, hey, maybe these packages that went missing were actually really jealous atheists that wanted these totally rad shoes, and so they kept them for themselves.
You're always looking on the slightly larcenous bright side of life, aren't you?
You have a wonderfully criminal mind, Becky.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're catching up on the news that we didn't do in the last couple weeks because it's been busy. We're going to talk about one of our favorite crackpots in a minute, Deepak Chopra.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, Knowledge Night and No Cover Live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we got a very nice email about last week. This is Bill from Virginia Beach, who writes, Frank Zappa wound up working at a gas station. I have that CD in my car. I connect with you good people. Christianity began at the grassroots, and now we and this is how we defeat it. My donation is well spent. Thank you very much, Bill. And yeah, Frank Zappa is an important person in my life. I just love his music. I was into his writing. I was actually introduced to the term secular humanist through his book, The Real Frank Zappa, where he talks about the religious organization he's a member of, the Church of American Secular Humanism. Please make all checks to cash. And it's like, man, secular humanism. So I looked it up. And so he says his donation is well spent. And if you would like to help out the show, you can donate to Peggy's Challenge. And we would like to thank Ronnie from Denmark, who's a repeat contributor, David from Redondo Beach, California, and Damien from Kingwood, Texas. Thank you guys very much for keeping the lights on. It really helps out the show. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And in other fundraising news, we started talking about it, and now we can give you specific details. June 21st at Louis G's at 5219 Pacific Highway East in Fife. We're going to have our summer benefit show. This is actually a show to help keep the lights on at Ask an Atheist. We'll have four musical acts with Animals and Cars, Variety Hour, Sleepy Pilot, and Body Box, which features somebody who's been on the show, a great friend of the show. He was on the Camp Quest Northwest episode, Nick Kennedy. He's their bassist. It's a really, you're going to see some really great, or hear some really great music, see some really great folks, have some really great pizza. Louis G's is a fantastic venue. It's a really nice venue.
One of the cool things about this venue is that it is an all ages venue.
It is. Yes.
It's a rock venue, but hey, you can have, 12 year olds running around every so often, and it's cool. And it's a great way to support local music too.
It is. It's $10 at the door. Doors open at 7 p.m. Again, that's Louis G's, 5219 Pacific Highway East in Fife on June 21st. And as I said when we were going into the break, we're going to talk about Deepak Chopra right now. This is this guy's great. He's one of those folks who is basically a mystic, is just a modern mystic. But he likes to throw scientific terms into what he's saying to give him sort of a gravitas that he wouldn't otherwise have. This is, it's cargo cult mysticism in a way, which we've talked about. So he's blaming TED's recent semi-censorship on militant atheists, so us.
Who else?
Popular internet sites such as Slate, Reddit, and the Huffington Post have become home to an ongoing controversy between organizers of the popular lecture series TED and Deepak Chopra. The controversy began when TEDx director Lara Stein issued guidelines for TEDx organizers on avoiding pseudoscience and health hoaxes. Deepak Chopra wasn't having it. He responded that the guidelines were the work of angry, noisy bloggers who promote militant atheism.
Woohoo!
Yes! TED and TEDx stand by the requirements, though. Chris Anderson of TED reaffirmed their commitment to credible science as both respectful of their audience and of the institution that, by its very nature, is open to constant revision and improvement.
It's really quite an amazing little back and forth going on. Open letters, to HuffPost from Deepak Chopra, basically saying, hey, you've censored us and you have something against non-local consciousness and exploring consciousness as part of a valuable, thing. I mean, TED's whole, tagline is ideas worth spreading. And he thinks that this is an idea that's worth spreading, regardless of the veracity of it or the fact that it can be backed up with repeated, experimentation and or data.
Yeah, I don't think that they have a problem with non-local consciousness. I think they have a problem with non-evidence-based assertions. I mean,
right.
that's the gist of it. If you want to talk on TED, even if you're speaking on the topic of philosophy, you'd better have your data set and ready to go.
That's rather the point.
Yeah, exactly. That's what TED is for.
I just love playing. I love it when they play the censorship card. It's like Deepak Chopra. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. He's completely unsung. He doesn't make millions of dollars on the talk circuit like that. He's never been on national television. He's never been on the radio. He's never been on the Oprah show. But if TED doesn't want him there, that's censorship.
Nobody's giving him a venue.
By that same
view, his ideas.
By that same logic, why am I not on the 700 Club? Why? What? CBN? What? You are remiss in your national duties by not letting me be on the 700 Club. What? This argument makes no sense.
Just as a quick aside on things that don't make any sense, there actually is a Deepak Chopra quote generator.
Is there?
Yeah, if you Google those terms, and
I think I just wrote one in my head.
Yeah, and you know, you can put in like one word and click, and it'll just come up with a Deepak Chopra quote. and it's not actually a Deepak Chopra quote, but the difference, I mean, you know, like the difference between regular quantum physics and non-local consciousness is completely indistinguishable.
Yeah.
So can I actually give a real Deepak Chopra quote from his letter? Because it's just so rich. It's so delicious. He says, of non-local consciousness, when the militant atheists and self-described skeptics, what the militant atheists and self-described skeptics hate is a certain brand of magical thinking that endangers science. Well, yes.
Wait, yes.
Non-local consciousness means the possibility that there is mind outside the human brain or even outside material reality, that a conscious mind is in some way intrinsic to the quantum universe, and that we all are quantum entangled.
This is what I mean about Karg occult mysticism. He's just throwing words in, and I don't know that he understands the deeper context of what he's saying, because it comes out does not meaning a lot. I mean, the concept of non-local consciousness, that's fairly clear, but that's the only thing that's really clear to me in that quote.
Yeah, I think if you YouTube Deepak Chopra and look up the times that he's done debates at universities or done lectures, if you watch the question and answer sessions, you'll see that he clearly has no idea, not even the foggiest idea of the principles of quantum physics. He really is just throwing in words, you know, like as if he were making a Japanese video game in the 80s, you know, just buzzwords to sound cool.
Fair enough.
Speaking of buzzwords, can I just get up a little bit on this designation of militant atheists?
Yes.
Are we bombing anyone? Are we shooting anyone? Are we even threatening anyone by saying, hey, your video, stupid?
I was wondering, you know, when we talk about the word militant atheists, this is usually something that we say, and I was a little worried about going that route this week. But that's a real point, is we're being called militant atheists because we don't want pseudoscience in our party. That's what this is. We don't want Deepak Chopra saying, "Oh, I'm having a quantum entangled banana membrane split." And, yeah, I don't want that at my party. But that makes me a militant, I guess. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't really get it either. But, I mean, it's the closest I've ever seen to militant atheists are the atheist veterans that I know.
Well, that's a new.
Yeah, they are militant and they are atheists, right, but they're not militant.
Not necessarily the same thing. They're kind of like religious scientists. You're one or the other, just not at the same time.
Well,
you can be both.
Hey, Ken, there are religious people who have done very good science.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you can't apply religious thinking to science or scientific thinking to religion.
Okay.
Therefore, in my assertion, as sort of the verb idea of being a scientist or being religious, you can't do both at the same time. But you can be both in sort of the long-term average.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I would say that requires a certain amount of cognitive dissonance.
People are fantastic at holding cognitive dissonance and doing really mostly good things at the same time while doing that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So this is, but the thing is, it's not the amazing meeting. It's not TAM. It's not an atheist thing. It's a science thing.
Right.
And there have been a lot of religious people who participate in TED. And there's been a lot of those religious people. And here's the thing, in the scientific community and people who are interested in science, atheists are not necessarily in the majority, but that doesn't matter. You're in the science community. It's about the scientific method.
You know, from my observations in school, at least, it seems like initially atheists are not in the majority in science classes, but over time they tend to be at least the 50% as far as long-term science majors go.
I was thinking more in the wider sort of scientists and sort of the people who, like I and Becky are, who are more like science cheerleaders who are interested in science.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, no, certainly not the majority in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I would direct people to is Lara Stein's initial letter for the guidelines of organizers of TEDx talks. You know, basically she said that their hope is to give hosts some basic tools to think critically and to let them know that they have both the right and the responsibility to be skeptical. She does not expect them to be up on every single, you know, piece of scientific knowledge and in currency. But
yeah.
But that is a fantastic letter about what constitutes good science and what's bad science? What are red flags and what are really good, you know, hallmarks of good data collection?
Could you put links to this stuff on our website on askanatheist.tv so people can track it down?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll put the links to the funny letters about militant atheists going under attack on near-death experiences and telepathy, but yeah. Also that letter about what's good science, what's bad science.
So continuing in this theme of atheists saying things that people don't like, let's bring it a little bit closer to home. We have an email from David from Los Osos, California. And you were saying that you like the name Los Osos.
Los Osos means the bears.
Oh. The bears.
Los Osos.
Los yes. Osos.
That has resonance with me, as you might imagine. And he writes, "You put a lot of energy in condemning Chavez of Venezuela for his silly theistic ideas. However, it is always useful to ask, are more people better off because of his rule? Obviously, his religious ideas seem foolish to us, but do you smugly seem to relish pointing out, just as the U.S. media would do?"
I think we are part of the U.S. media here.
That was my first thing, is I'm in the U.S., I'm on the radio. I'm not, like, a part of the media machine, but at this point...
David may live in California. Washington is part of the union as well.
I'm glad he's getting the results that he expected.
Way to talk down.
Sorry. Hey, he's talking about being smug. I figured I'd give him some smugness.
All right. Do you feel Martin Luther King was a foolish despot for promoting his ideas of better economic opportunity for blacks and poor folks because his ideas were heavily grounded in his religious ideals? I would say that it's more important to find common ground than side with the U.S. empire. Face it, U.S. oil wants Venezuela's resources. Let's see you go on the air and point out King's religious flaws. Then your audience will dwindle to a handful. If I may, I would be happy to point out Martin Luther King's religious flaws, and it goes like this. It's exactly what we've been saying the whole time. People equate his morality to religion, that his morality stems from religion, and our argument has always been that our morality stems from our mutual empathy and our mutual biological nature. And people are just using religion as a cover for that, because sometimes saying that our morality comes from places that we have decided, that morality comes from us, that our morality is essentially our responsibility, people find that frightening. And I would say that he might have suffered from that too. But was he still a good man? Yes.
Absolutely.
Did he do a lot of good work? Absolutely. One of the most important things in the 20th century, it was what he did. And here's the thing. Here's the difference that you're ignoring. Martin Luther King was a social activist. He was a nonviolent social activist. Hugo Chavez was none of those things. And another thing, Hugo Chavez was in charge of a country. He was the chief executive of Venezuela. And you can ask these questions. Are more people better off because of his rule? And that's a question that is not easily answered. And my whole point for talking about Hugo Chavez was the uncritical nature in which the atheism community and liberal atheists in the United States were addressing the death of Chavez, as they were saying a lot of these things that didn't make a lot of sense, that were not supported by evidence. And my proposition is that if we're going to be atheists and we're going to be skeptics and we're going to be rationalists, we need to apply these things universally. And people were asking me for examples of places not in religion where I applied this logic, and Hugo Chavez was one of them. And as a result, we've been getting a lot of emails like this. There was, for the website, a fairly large thread of me having an argument basically about this. His political policies, as far as oil and economics and stuff like that, this is not the place that Ask an Atheist goes. This is not a position that I have. I don't really care. What I was looking at was what he did for free speech, how he treated his people, how freedom of thought and freedom of religion worked in Venezuela. That's where we were talking about, and that's a place where Hugo Chavez fell down. For example, Becky posted a comment recently. You were bopping around on some South American atheist web pages, and you came across one called, what was it called?
It's called Ateo Venezolano, and he wrote this blog entry last fall, and he was talking about how CAN TV, which is the national telephone company that basically 95% of users have, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, they've got that market cornered. They've censored further publications of postings via the blogger networks, and then he was having to update using a proxy server. And he was writing, and this is my translation from the Spanish. He says, a government cannot speak of freedom of expression if its main telephone company blatantly blocks access to Venezuelan bloggers. This is a country that wishes to censor its writers because the principal opposition comes from social networks, the likes of which aren't yet controlled by the government. It should be noted that nowadays the government has an immense number of communal radio channels that speak very well of Chavez's management, but social networks still represent an obstacle.
So here's the thing. You can like what Chavez did economically. You can be in support of that. There are a lot of people on Facebook, on social media, who are totally talking that up. But the fact of the matter is, he fell down on stuff like this. There was central control of media. There's a lot of central control of media. There's a lot of state-run media. There was a lot of access to social networks that were blocked. Radio stations were turned off. And you can say it was necessary to do this or whatever, but you have to look at it all, and you have to look at it critically, and you must talk about it. And a lot of people are comparing what Chavez did into, was it Uruguay?
In terms of what? Comparing...
The liberal stuff that they were doing there?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of South American countries that are influenced in the sort of socialist liberal perspective,
right.
You know, by Chavez. You have the president of Uruguay that says, I'm going to live very modestly and donate my salary to the majority of, you know, people. You have, you know, Evo Morales
But like the marriage equality stuff and stuff like that. And if you were a fan of what was going on there, why was it necessary for limitations on free speech in Venezuela and not in Uruguay and not in Iceland and not in other places? So all I'm asking the atheist community to do is to look at it critically, look at the whole picture, and don't just parrot words like sheeple or U.S. empire. All right? This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back in a moment, we're going to have a bit of an extended moment of science.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp!
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And in the break, we sort of had a little bit of a control room revolution where I was chastised for not mentioning some of the crazy things that we make fun of about Hugo Chavez, and specifically about Mars.
It's all right. I mean, basically, we're you know, making fun of Chavez's crazy theistic leanings. And it's not so much theistic as it is just completely baseless and irrational.
Yeah, I think wacky is the word you're looking for.
My favorite one really is that there once was a grand civilization on Mars, but the capitalists came and killed it. Or it reached a point of capitalism in which it just became completely decadent and died out.
So was he joking?
Then why is it red?
Hey! Wow. Wow.
It was some of his flowery language. I think this was presented at the UN, possibly.
Okay. But that sounds like a joke I would make. I mean,
I think he was using it as a metaphor, but, okay. You know, it's... Why would you use Mars and civilization on Mars as your metaphor for that?
Yeah, it's not with the political content, but you know, making a joke about Mars is about Martian empires is right up my alley.
Didn't he also say that the U.S. was giving him cancer?
Morales said that, right? Or
no, not Morales. It was Maduro.
Maduro, sorry,
who has been recently elected. He was the vice president, and he's been recently elected as his presidential successor. And he said, yes, the U.S. government or the Western governments were poisoning him with the cancer.
I am so crap at names. I am so bad at names. So we have a moment of sort of an extended moment of science. We're gonna have a little bit of a discussion.
A little more conversational.
What do we have for today?
Well, today I want to talk about respecting your elders.
Oh.
Seriously?
I'm already checking out. Yeah. Later, skaters.
You know, I think you guys are both older than me, so stick around for
And strangely enough, I don't think you respect me.
Maybe.
In public. We all get our DNA, our genetic code that makes us who we physically are, from somebody. Obviously, we have our parents to credit for our immediate genetics. But we can take it a little bit further than that. Some recent research and mathematical modeling that's been done by Kristen Hawkes, Peter Kim, and James Coxworth indicates that having postmenopausal females, basically old ladies, in our social groups was one of the important factors that allowed our brains and our society to become so complex. So they sort of posed the question, could we have gotten this far without our grandmas? Maybe, but would have been a lot tougher. And the gist of that was that having these females who have an interest in getting the young mother's offspring established, as mm-hmm. they are their own genetic lineage, but are not competing for resources by being breeding females themselves, sort of freed up the mothers and the rest of these early social groups to get more done as far as hunting and foraging, that kind of thing goes.
So having extended families was a bit of an asset in hunter-gatherer societies, is what you're saying.
Right. That's what their modeling supports.
Okay.
But we can go a little bit further than that. Sam, for instance, is a great big techie and loves all kinds of gadgetry.
Fair enough.
So we can give a nod to one of our great ancestors, Australopithecus, for that. Some recent evidence shows that they may have been using tools to crack open bones and get at the marrow as far as 2.6 million years ago.
Oh, right on.
And as sort of pre-hominids, we owe them a little bit for that. We've come a really long way from the volcanic stone hammers that they used to the James Webb telescope we're getting ready to launch. But, you know, you have to start somewhere.
Right.
But... you know me, I like to go as far back as is logically possible.
Source material, as it were.
So this one's for everybody, really. The next time that you eat an apple, just think about your teeth a little bit. Just think about it. We slice food with our incisors, and we macerate it with our molars, and it doesn't really seem that strange to us, but having differentiated teeth, different kinds of teeth in your mouth, is really something that's not common in the animal world, and is one of those things that sort of makes us a mammal. Fish don't have this, sharks don't have this, lizards don't have this, and this innovation comes from another ancestor of ours from way, way back. This is our great-great-great-great, etc. grandma, Caras ignathus gracilis. This distant relative was among the first creatures to carry this mammalian trait way back in the late Permian, which was about 250 million years ago.
All so right. What kind of animal was this? This was a furry, warm-blooded...
It's not really known whether it was furry or warm-blooded, but that it had differentiated teeth and a number of other mammalian traits. And this was before the age of the dinosaurs. Basically, these sort of mammal-like pseudo-reptilian, I guess, pre-mammals,
right,
kind of ruled the earth for a time, and then they got wiped out, and then the sort of reptilians that became the dinosaurs and the birds and other things kind of took over.
So it goes,
yeah.
But there must have been some genetic, you know, continuity to have these differentiated teeth,
right?
Supposedly,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, not everything was wiped out. There is still evidence of this lineage throughout the entire the rest of the fossil record. But it goes back further than that, of course. Take just a deep breath in and let it out, and just think about how nice that feels. It really does feel good to get a nice full breath of air. And those lungs were actually first innovated by lobe-finned fishes, not that dissimilar from the modern coelacanth. And in particular, they were developed by a very strange walking fish relative of ours called Tiktaalik rosier. He's the one that you see in the cartoons crawling onto land, second in line, you know, behind or just in front of the fish there.
Right.
And Tiktaalik was only recently discovered. I think it was, was it 2000?
Oh, so this,
it was in the 2000s.
So we just sort of,
because I want to say, but it was in northern Canada that this fossil was finally discovered.
You'd see walking fish in those cartoons well before 2008, but
they didn't actually have the fossil evidence.
Okay,
yeah, it was actually discovered by a man. I think his name is Neil Shubin, and his team. He wrote a terrific book called "Your Inner Fish" about the similarities that we share with all these other sort of creatures. But yeah, those lungs popped up about 375 million years ago in the late Devonian period. And that's a lot to process, so have a little side-to-side stretch and feel your spine flex. And that's pretty great, too. The first one of us to feel that was probably called Haikuichthyus. It was a very fish-like early chordate. It was about an inch long and lived half a billion years ago during the Cambrian explosion, in which almost all of the modern animal phyla first appeared. But this Cambrian explosion, I mean, why did all these multicellular body plans just sort of appear at the same time? I mean, it seems strange, and it's very puzzling, but it strongly correlates to a very important event brought around by another early life form. And this is actually what happened is that we started using ATP. We started using a lot of ATP. But to make a lot of ATP fast requires just a ton of oxygen. Just a crap load of oxygen. And unfortunately, Earth's early atmosphere just didn't have much oxygen. But about a half billion years ago, about 3.5 billion years ago, some very cool microbes called cyanobacteria first appear. They developed the ability to use water, carbon dioxide, and energy from the sun to make sugars. And this product has one fantastic byproduct, which is O2, atmospheric oxygen. It took them almost 3 billion years, but they managed to pump out enough O2 into our atmosphere that multicellular life and the rapid use of ATP became possible. So we all owe these cyanobacteria big time.
So if we're talking about terraforming a new rock somewhere out in space, we got to think of more than just the photosynthesizers in order to do it, because it'll take about 3 billion years.
About 3 billion years.
I hope we can come up with some engineering shortcuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the important things that I think that we can take out of this, looking back at the fossil record, is, you know, you look back at it and you think, well, those are some interesting bones and stones, this sort of disconnected stone menagerie. But don't look at it like that. Look back and think of it as an old and faded family photo album. Look back with some love and some gratitude for the creatures that came before us and came up with the innovations that our bodies are still using.
Very cool. So ATP, that's the chemical. Is an oxygen transport chemical or something?
It's like adenosine triphosphate, and not a whole lot in the cell there's not a whole lot that goes on in, I should say, eukaryotic cells or in fact, prokaryotic cells that doesn't use ATP.
Okay, so it's a pretty fundamental chemical for life.
Yeah, if your heart is pumping, if you're sitting there thinking, if you're asleep, if you move a muscle, if you digest food, ATP has to be manufactured and processed.
Well, thank you very much for that one, for all those many words.
I think my favorite of the many words is the fish, the Haikuichthyus.
Yeah.
Haikuichthyus.
Yeah. Is it like haiku, like the poem? Because that'd be cool.
You know, I'll admit that that's a word I've only ever seen in print.
Okay.
I sat there for a little bit trying to figure out how to pronounce it. You know, went to the pronunciation guides and the online dictionaries. It's like, no help there.
We need to do some poetry about it.
I think so.
Some few syllabic poems.
So in sort of a relation to this early life stuff and just the vastness of life, we have an email with a theistic question. This comes to us from George from Baker City, Oregon. And he writes, an argument that I'm getting from a particular theist is that evidence for God is in the sky, oceans, the land, the grass, the mountains, the apple trees, and the grapevines.
The rainbows, the puppies, the kittens.
It's the look at the sky, look at the trees argument. How would you guys respond to this? And my first response is, when I was a kid, I used this argument. And this was my prime argument for thinking that maybe I had that God-shaped hole. Like maybe there was something to religion that I was missing. And then I got older, and I learned more, and I just saw how you know, I got to hear more from people like Dan about how the universe was put together and how it didn't require somebody waving the baton. It was just this really vast, really complex, really amazing thing, and it just sort of, it still maintained sort of that feeling that they talk about when they say, look at the flowers, look at the trees, but now it was tied to something more real. It was like, wow, the universe is amazing, and it doesn't... And the whole idea of somebody behind it just sort of, it wasn't that it denied somebody behind it. It just, it became irrelevant because it was irrelevant to the process.
You know, I think it's nice to look at the flowers and look at the trees and appreciate the beauty of nature and all that. But, I mean, if you're looking for some sort of meaning in a benevolent deity, you're also going to have to look at intestinal parasites. And, yeah. and you're going to have to look at Ebola. And actually, just before the show, we were talking about a funny little bird called the shrike.
Yes.
It's kind of wanted to be a raptor and never quite made the grade. It's it's not big enough or strong enough with a beak or talons to kill other prey items. Itself by, you know, tearing them apart like an eagle would.
Right.
So instead, it grabs them in midair and slams them against these thorny branches and impales them and you know, sits down and starts to eat while these things are squirming squirming on the thorn.
So kind of a combination of professional wrestling and Hellraiser. It sounds
yeah.
like. I think you said a heart of a robin and yes. and eating habits of
the body of a robin and the heart of Vlad the Impaler. That's yes.
wow.
So evidence for God, my friends.
And that's
not
the,
really.
That's the thing is when you have to look at the universe, you have to see that a lot of it is, you know, is inspiring to us. It inspires the numinous, as Carl Sagan would call it in us. But there's also parts of it that we don't like to talk about, you know, parts of it that are to us gross and icky or dangerous. You know, mm-hmm. I usually...
In no way majestic.
You're like your dad, Becky, was really surprised that I would keep a number of diseases on tap to talk about when people would talk about the majesty of the universe. And they said, majesty of the universe? All right, let's talk about harlequin ichthyosis.
Terrible disease where your skin is not... Yeah.
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 And we're you know, that's a common one that atheists respond with is if you're talking about the majesty of the universe, thank you for reminding me of that word. You know, there's also a bunch of stuff that we don't like harlequin ichthyosis. Babies are born, they look like they've been turned inside out. It is not pretty. But I think another argument, and a slightly more positive argument, if we feel like saying, is the one I opened with, is one of the things that makes the universe so majestic is just how it's put together and how it operates without any design at all, and just sort of just the whole evolution of the whole process, and I find that incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, who was it that said the most inexplicable thing about the universe is that it is in fact explicable?
I like that.
You know, on the topic of a god of nature, if there's a god that created all these things and the biological system, which pretty much relies on death, I mean, even primary producers like plants are competing mm-hmm. with one another and locked in this perpetual battle their entire lives, even though we can't really see it. But if it turns out that there is such a god and a judgment day comes,
yeah.
I'll be, you know, pleased to patiently stand before it and listen as it gives an account of its actions, and I promise to give it a fair hearing before I pass judgment upon it for being awful.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
Sounds good to me.
Actually coming up on the top of the hour, but I would like to hear a response to that sometime. So we have a little bit of sort of a bookkeeping email, sort of. We have Gary from Superior, Wisconsin, and he writes, I have a question about the statement that one of your hosts made during the show with the leader of the National Atheist Party. The host questioned having the leader on the National Atheist Party on the show, or something along the lines of not broadcasting the show. Because this is my first time listening, I did not understand why the hosts of Ask an Atheist has a problem with the NAP. I should talk about that because this is, you know, I'm a producer. This is what we talk about. And the problem we had with the National Atheist Party was its political nature. During the Hugo Chavez segment, I said, you know, we don't hold positions. The show doesn't really hold a position on things, on politics, not related to atheism, separation church of state, and skepticism. There's a lot of liberal atheists out there, especially in the United States, but there's also a lot of not liberal atheists out there in the United States. And we want to, as a show that's looking to represent atheism, we want to represent all of these people. And to do that, I think we sort of have to stay away from those topics. And when we talk about the National Atheist Party, because they're a political party, they're going to have stances on these subjects. And we were a little bit worried that, we would have to talk about that, or we'd have to show our hand there. We do show our hands, like, and the other part of this is we were concerned about the viability of the National Atheist Party. Mike Gillis is a, you know, he did third party politics, and he had a lot of questions for the National Atheist Party, which in our research it looked like they didn't have answers for. The interesting thing is that when we had the guy who was at the time the head of the National Atheist Party he had answers for all of those questions.
I think also what this shows is, hey, yeah, we do want to, you know, show all kinds of atheists, and some atheists are political activists.
Yeah.
And this is one way in which some atheists have gathered and decided to act upon their lack of belief, how they differentiate themselves from theists in the United States and in the political, you know, arena.
Yeah. And that was the thing, is they had answers to those questions, and it looked like there was some viability to it. I'm not certain I would support the National Atheist Party personally, for the same reason that a lot of folks have written to us asking questions about, which is, I'm not certain that I want to be a member of a political party with any religious affiliation. And political parties with religious affiliations are not uncommon outside of the United States. But in the context of the United States, with the way we think about the First Amendment and with the way we would like the First Amendment to be implemented in politics, I worry a little bit about a political party with a religious affiliation.
With a religious orientation.
Yeah,
with a specific stance on religion.
Yeah. And I feel like when we did that interview, I feel like he answered those questions pretty well, but I'm still sort of on the fence there. I'm actually not really on the fence. I'm still sort of the opinion that I don't know that I want to be in a religiously affiliated political party.
I know we're, you know, trying not to get too political, but I mean, just the fact that I think everybody in this room is openly for separation of church and state.
Yes. See, that's where atheism...
In that respect, we have already kind of gotten political. And we don't have to align ourselves with another political party just because they slap the name atheist on it. But I don't think that we can avoid being politicos to a lesser extent just by standing up for what we believe in here.
We are interested in politics, but what we want to talk about in politics on Ask an Atheist is atheism, skepticism, the separation of church and state. So there's a clear interest in talking about the First Amendment. And we feel that extends to things like abortion and marriage equality, which is why we choose to talk about those.
Right.
But when we start talking about like the side issues, we like to have long discussions and sort of drag it out in the community, like that 6-month conversation I had about marriage equality. Looking for a skeptical based, a scientifically based reason to be against marriage equality. 6 months, we didn't find one. So after that, and to be honest with you, I didn't expect to find one, but we didn't find one. So we talked about it. So we took a position, and then referendum 74 happened. So any
I mean, I guess we got some people who said it was icky, but nobody seemed to have anything.
That was it.
Empirical.
So I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Sam. With me was Rebecca Friedman and Dan Lombardo. Our music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman, Phil Whitfield, and Steve Siemens. Post show is at Doyle's at 5 p.m. in
Play
Tacoma,
radio.
Be there. See you next week.
Conversation Station. KLAY Lakewood Tacoma on 1180 AM.